Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. And just before I start the show, let me just remind you that tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running my DFA live show with Professor Steve Keen, and we'll be discussing why real-world economics matters. Very important conversation, and you can ask a question live. So mark your diary, and we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. Sydney time. And after a bit of a hiatus last week, Edwin is back for his Monday evening rant. Edwin, hello. Great to see you back.
Great to see me back. It's good to see you, Martin. I almost forgot what you look like. I think you've gone taller, grew a little bit more hair, and your eyes have gone blue.
Yeah, well, as I think I explained to people, we had some engineering issues locally. They were replacing some of the power cables. So I decided to cut my losses and go away for a few days. So I had some time walking in and around South Devon, which is a lovely part of the world. In fact, we might just drop a little bit of a brief clip here. This is actually one of the walks that I did with the dogs, and great views, and it was really good to get out and have a breath of air and see some of the countryside. And I came back and discovered that the power was back on again. So we're back in business.
Yes, they said let there be light, and light was.
Well, you know, it is annoying because, of course, with the electronics that I've got here, when the power goes off, it's not a simple job of just turning everything back on again, right? There are things you have to do to be able to make sure that the servers are working and everything else, and the internet's working. So, and because of the fact that the power cuts were unpredictable, it wasn't the full time off, but it was going to be turned off and turned on, you know, just crazy. So I thought, well, let's get away. And in fact, we had good weather as well. But meantime, talking about good weather, you know, the property market in Australia, what the hell is going on, right? So, you know, wherever you look, you see contending stories. In fact, I did this show, it came out yesterday, The Housing Market, Sheep and Goats, because I tried, to encapsulate the fact that there are some people buying and buying quite strongly, particularly property investors. There are other people absolutely caught now with real issues with regards to making those mortgage repayments, and many first-time buyers absolutely struggling. So we've got this massive inequality, this massive hiatus between the haves and the have-nots, between those who are more affluent and those who are struggling. And unfortunately, more and more people, it seems to me, are finding that these higher interest rates are really biting.
Look, and this is something that we spoke about years ago, and we started alluding to it, and we said if you recall, even before we had that conversation with Louis Christopher, we spoke about the things that people were going to do without in order to maintain the principal place of residence, because the principal place of residence is the last bastion. That's where you draw, you draw all your weapons and you start firing at the enemy. It's just one of those things, Martin, that the many have sold the toys, many have sold the holiday homes, the essentials, the making do without health insurance, the making do without a lot of things that would better the life of the young ones that they're rearing up in the homes. And that's the sad part about the situation we're in, Martin. It really is. Even Luna and media agree.
Yes, I have to say that the dogs are a little noisy at the moment. Somebody's just gone past the back door and making their presence felt. But yeah, it is, you know, the story is becoming clearer, I think. And in fact, I did a series of shows last week when I went through the mortgage stress information in more detail. The truth is that we've got more and more people getting corralled by the difficulties that they're facing. And, this was quite an interesting article because basically Gittings was writing about the fact that the Reserve Bank's attack on inflation hasn't really worked that well, but has stopped economic growth. But he calls out the fact that older households without mortgage debt are benefiting from share markets, you know, traveling at record highs. There's record high values and rents for their investment properties and the lack of tax and superannuation. And yet younger households are being absolutely squeezed out of the marketplace. And we've got this really stupid position where the Reserve Bank will not be able to cut rates simply because inflation is still too strong, but more and more pressure is being put on more and more households. And of course, businesses too. We keep coming back to the fact that the truth is that builders are falling over left, right and center. You know, there was some more reported this last week. So it really is becoming a more and more complex picture. And it's interesting that the Reserve Bank's commentary over recent times, Bullock was in front of the Parliament this last week. She was saying, well, you know, we may even have to put rates higher. And whilst there are some who are perhaps saying, well, you know, it's unlikely that rates will go higher, you can't necessarily completely dismiss it because inflation is really sticky. And the fact is that, like it or not, this is becoming a really significant issue. Now, okay, the new deputy governor actually said, well, you know, we don't want to be too concerned about putting rates higher, but the consequences is that Australians' inflation is going to stay high for longer. That means interest rates are going to be high for longer. And, you know, in this article here, we can, if you're on a low income, if you're on a fixed income, struggling to make ends meet, inflation is really toxic. We've got to squeeze that out. But the consequences for ordinary Australians are really now coming home to roost. And we've still got high migration, of course. We've still got the massive amount of underbuilding. And the question is, well, why is it that we seem to be spending a lot of money doing stuff that isn't actually creating significant momentum in the property market from a construction perspective, and yet you've still got these high interest rates? So I feel as though the Australian economy is now hitting the buffers.
Look, it is an interesting time that we're in. As you said, all these things that are against the first time buyers, and this is where I make my point. I've been trying to make my point for a long time, and that is the government policies that have been brought up over the last few years has really harmed the first time buyers and has really harmed the Aussie battlers that are wanting to get into a longevity of tenure, whether it be by owning a home, being slaves to the bank, as many would say, or even renting a home for long term. But having that longevity of tenure with some form of comfort. But where we are now, Martin, is that unless the governments, from your local governments to the state and federal governments, unless they really work together and work for a solution, and we look at the many areas that are impeding the changeover, it's not going to happen. We're really walking into 2025. Where the next era, the next phase of our where we are, our journey that we've gone through over the last few years is now, I believe, is going to be very much devastating. We're going to go into a huge breakdown in many societies' norms. We're going to have, in my opinion, we've got to brace ourselves for a lot of crime, petty crime, whatever, because people are going to be going without. And when they go without for a long time, well, sooner than later, they're going to start invading other people's possessions in order to get by, just to get by. And this is where we're headed. With regards to the RBA lifting rates or keeping rates on hold, I really don't believe that it's going to affect, even if we go up another 25 or 50 basis points, it's really not going to affect those that are buying, because those that are buying are sitting on a much different hill than the ones that are wanting to come into the market, because, as you said, those that are buying are predominantly the investors, predominantly overseas migrants, new migrants that have come in with wads of cash. And the simple fact that I keep on reiterating on our show over and over again is that we're not a very big market. We've only got under 20,000 homes for sale in Sydney. We're just a bit over 16,000 properties in the Sydney region. I mean, that's pittance in comparison to a lot of other major cities around the world. And when you've got a lot of people that are looking at Sydney as the destination of choice, I mean, we've got a long way to go. And as you also alluded to the point that you've got construction companies going bust left, right, and center. Mid-tier companies are more than 50% are already trading insolvent, and some of the first-tier companies are, I would say, are starting to get the shakes. So it's really a scenario where you've got a lot of announceables, you've got a lot of rhetoric. We've had a lot of rhetoric since Albo and Co Real Estate franchise group come into power. Took over, ScoMo and Partners Real Estate Group, and we've had a lot of, as you say, announceables. I mean, we've had Housing Australia has spent $30 million on consultants, executive salaries without building a bloody home. I mean, this is where we're at, Martin. So you've got we still got to feel the effects of the huge immigration wave that we've had, and we're going to continue to experience, and we're going to continue to experience that for a while still. We've got very little to no construction going on. We got major building companies that are wobbly, mid-tier companies that are, as I said, over 50% are trading insolvent, and there's your local builders that just don't want to build because they just don't want to get caught up. They prefer to go fishing than what than build. If anything, what I have noticed over the last few weeks is that a lot of small builders are just buying themselves a project. In other words, they're getting an old, dilapidated home. They're becoming flippers. There are more and more tradies that are going into that, and hence the reason why you've also got the announcements of more investors coming into the market, and a lot of them are made up of not only your WeChat chatterers, your Silent Tigers, your new kids on the block, but also you've got another wave that's just basically pulled the pin on building for others, and they're just basically buying, renovating, and selling. Yeah, they're just going to focus on that, or they're waiting for the announcements, Mince's announcements closer to the end of the year as to what's going to happen with the new regulations around construct around the development sites, where potentially just about every home in Sydney is potentially geared to become a dual occupancy, or where people can build duplexes. So this is what's coming. This is where we are in the background. This is where what developers, builders are doing. So look, I'm saddened, I'm sorry to say, but the simple fact is that the first home buyers, the battlers, the single parents, and others are just really being thrown under the bus by the different governments that we've had, by these foolish grants and band-aid solutions that they've been throwing at first-time buyers for so many years. So, but as I said, I don't believe that, regardless of the fact that at the moment we're running more properties, more listings on market than what we have been in 2023, but where 2022 still trumps the current listings that we have. In 2022, we had over 18,000 listings same time this month. Currently, we've got we're 2,000 or so more listings than what we had last year. But 22, we're still a lot of higher. We're still not back to your normal figures of 24,000, 25,000 listings on market in the Sydney region. And again, I say, and I reiterate, and I emphasize, we're a very small market in comparison to a lot of major capital cities. So, look, as much as people are getting excited, about potential rates going up, about or even the rates remaining high for a lot longer. Well, you know, we've had conversations with banking insiders, and there's very little to no debt that banks are are selling off to debt collectors by way of bad debt that is made up of mortgage holders. I mean, why? Because even mortgagee possessions that go on the market for sale are achieving phenomenal prices because of the demand. We really need to see those 24,000, 25,000 listings on market before we could quench this beast that we have at the moment, Martin.
Absolutely. And it is quite concerning, I think, seeing the trends. Just you mentioned investing. This was the latest data here. And what's fascinating about this is that we're seeing a significant rise in lending for investment purposes. So there is a cohort that is piling into the investment properties. But interestingly, a lot of the investment properties that people are buying are actually those in lower value areas. And they're competing directly with first-time buyers. Excuse me, hang on. I'll cut that bit out. The other interesting observation, though, again, and this is actually coming through from some of the other articles, that buyers are not deterred by cities surging property prices. So there are still some people who are actively buying, even despite some of the legislative changes and property taxes, etc., that have been put into the Brisbane market. But the consequences of this is that many people are now buying units rather than new houses. And this article really made the point that in some areas, and it's interesting that Parramatta comes up here, people are actually buying more houses, more units than houses. So the mix of property that people can buy have changed dramatically. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of those units in high rise are poorly built and have lots of construction related issues, as we are seeing. And then this one, which is really interesting, you know, your new norm for city deposits is $100,000 plus. So how many people who are actually able to get into the market are really able to put together such a large deposit? The answer is not that many. So again, some who are, again, thanks to the bank of mum and dad, or perhaps because they've got other investments there in the background, but a lot of people just aren't able to do that. And yet, look at the property spruikers. So if you actually look at the sorts of things that we're seeing at the moment, this one really took me at no, bits by surprise, really. Young people can still get into property market with some good advice. Sacrifice now for bigger rewards later. Well, I just wonder. Again, I look at my surveys, Edwin, and sure, there are some who can do that, but there are so many more who are just completely out of it. And then the other side of it is those who actually did sacrifice to get in when rates were lower, they're now finding it's really, really hard to keep those mortgage repayments going, and the growth in incomes is still pretty weak. So we've got this massive craziness going on at the moment. And then if we overlay migration, which is still strong, people are still coming into the country, people are still coming with lots of money to spend. You can begin to see that this is really, really a very concerning and structural issue. And I don't think either side of politics really wants to tackle it, as we've just discussed before. And it's interesting, you flicked me over, Edwin, a very interesting piece from Canada.
Government bureaucrats don't build homes. Private sector builders do. Government bureaucrats are in the way. So we need to get the government bureaucracy out of the way and deliver fast, affordable permits to build the homes. One third of the cost of every newly built home in Ontario is government permits and taxes. One third. That's more than we spend on the labor to build the home. So we're spending more on the bureaucrats who don't build anything than we do on the carpenters, framers.
So there, Edwin, that clip shows you that actually in Canada, at least, there's this huge impost on the construction sector from taxes and charges and other things that actually are required to be able to get construction underway. And guess what? That mirrors what's happening in Australia rather well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is where I wrote that piece many years ago in one of the investment magazines, and I broke down the cost of the cost of construction, or what it costs a developer to put an apartment, from start to finish, what it would actually cost. So after the purchase of the land, from my recollection, it was about 43% of the costs were made up of taxes, duties, and other government government handouts, and and so forth. So this is and this is where, if they really want to make an impact, as Pierre points out there in that video, is he's saying bureaucrats don't build properties. The private sector build properties, builders build properties, carpenters build properties, plumbers and, as you call it, framers build properties. Bureaucrats don't. All bureaucrats do is spend money and create committees and create all sorts of duties and imposts in order to feed the gravy train that they're on. And this is the whole pretty much in a nutshell, he outlines it there in that clip. What we've been saying for many decades, and we've been sharing on the show for many years, the costs that are charged by way of council contributions, all sorts of costs in the red tape. Now Chris Mings is on a what is wanting to take the LGAs on, but as I said last year, early in the year, I said, well, he's got a fight on his hands, and he has been getting pushbacks for left, right, and centre. So this is the situation. And the unfortunate thing is, as we've alluded in previous shows, is that many are gravitating towards the older apartments because they can't even afford the older homes, and many can't travel further out west, northwest, southwest, in order to even buy a home, because it's not only the purchase of the home, and if they can only raise even $100,000 as a deposit, they've still got to come up with a stamp duty or other costs. But also, more to the point there, Martin, we go back to what I've been saying in my conversations with builders and developers and those that are no longer building for others, they'd be building for themselves. And they make up a big chunk of the investors that are buying properties out west, southwest, northwest, and west regions. You've got a situation now where you've got Kings Langley. Just sold there was a house sold at Kings Langley for shy, I think it was $25,000 shy of $2 million. I mean, that's we're talking Blacktown LGA, almost in the center, close to the center of Blacktown. We've got a house in Seven Hills that also was shy of $15,000 from the $2 million mark. We've got homes in Trailer Park, I mean Layla Park, that it was considered a trailer park not too long ago, but now we've got homes, old housing commission homes, that have been privatized, that are now being put on the back on the market, but literally knockdowns, and the land's going from on 540-560 square meters of land, or 600 or just a little bit above the 600. The land's going for 1.25. I mean, these are crazy figures. If you know about the Blacktown LGA, I mean, I've been following it for many years. I've worked there. I've worked around it. I've bought homes for my family, and I bought homes for investors in that area and for first-time buyers in that area as well. So, it's for me, it's always been the canary in the coal mine. But this is what I'll say, Martin, is that the appetite. This is just in the Blacktown LGA. I mean, there are a lot of other LGAs as well that are experiencing some huge prices for homes that were unheard of before, and they're still going, they're still northbound, which is crazy because of the demand, because of what we're allowing, whom we're allowing to buy, why we're allowing it to happen, and we're really deterring those that can build from building because of the red tape, policy, taxes, and a government that is slow to move. And doesn't want to look at the whole issue holistically, wants to sort of just try to navigate or tiptoe away from the real problems and the real concerns that people have. But look, as they say now, the new immigration policies for a lot of Western countries is certainly deterring the voters from voting, the left, and they're looking at the right. But, are the right any better? Is the question now? Is the right going to be any better? Is the right going to? We spoke about what the Witcher Chatter said about Dutton and his and what they thought about the immigration policy under him. There might be a little bit of relief, but for how long before it's cranked up again? And why are we doing it? It's because I believe it's because that there are other powers that are controlling politics, that need the high levels of immigration in order to keep wages down. So, I mean, they're my personal thoughts. They're my ideas of and listening to all the different groups that we talk to, that we share with, that we share about. In Melbourne's obviously bucking the trend, but that's because of the taxes and what the current premier, the previous premier, have done to the state and what's to come. Will it happen in Queensland or will it happen in New South Wales? I don't think so, because I could be wrong, but I can't see it happening in the next over the next year or two. And in the meantime, the appetite for purchasing property is high, and the investors are only going to get stronger and force the first home buyers and the battlers to buy shitty, badly built apartments.
Yeah, and I guess you can't also disconnect what's happening in the local situation in Australia with some of the broader issues. And I guess we should touch briefly on the China population cliff problem, right? Because you watch the dynamics there and you can see property prices continuing to, drift lower, but significantly drop lower, despite all the various stimulation that the Chinese government is throwing to try and rescue the property market. And there seems to be a little bit of a sea change. And one of those sort of sea change thoughts is, well, where else do I look then if property in China isn't a good place to buy property? Where do I look?
Well, the situation with China is interesting, and it does mirror what's happening here, what the thoughts are of the young people here as well, but not as much. But and we'll go into a little bit more detail. But I guess the main thing is we've been talking about the last generation movement there in China, and the government certainly has a fight on its hands. I mean, they're trying everything. I mean, having a child out of wedlock in China, in years gone by was a big no-no. Not so much a big no-no, but it was basically, if you had a child outside of wedlock, you couldn't register the child under the schooling system. You couldn't. You literally had to have a lot of money in order to put them through private education system. And it's there in China, it's very, very costly. So unless you can afford that, you weren't going to have a child outside of wedlock, because then you can't register them through the public schooling system and they simply won't get an education. Now they've got to the point in China, because of the huge fear that they have, the CCP have of about the population cliff. It is phenomenal what could potentially could happen. I mean, the property market's certainly going south. And there's no appetite for them to buy. They don't want to buy. They don't want to get married. They don't want to have kids. You've got graduates with with high accolades from university, with university degrees, masters, you name it, they've got it. And guess what? They're in the gig economy. They're happy to work two days a week, and they make do with that. And to the point where they don't want to have they don't even want to have relationships. This is what's scaring the government, because basically what they're saying is, they've asked the young people, they've asked them, why won't they consider having a relationship, or aren't you interested in having a relationship, any form of relationship? And they basically, their answer was interesting. What was shared to me, and basically their answer was, look, isn't this is their answer, right? The overall answer isn't TikTok, video games, home delivery, and WeChat enough for you? That was the answer to the pollsters. This is the last generation. So to the point where they're just not interested in relationship, where even the sexual drive is dumbed down, right? So the government is really, really running scared. I mean, what's going on, Martin? It's one of those things. They're just not interested. It's just mind-boggling. So the local chatter has picked up that conversation, or the what was happening in mainland China, and of course they started comparing and contrasting the differences between that and Australia, predominantly the Sydney chatter groups. And they're asking, will the same happen here? And there was an article that was brought out by, I think it was by the ABC originally, about the scary reason why young Australians aren't having children. And they were talking about it. And obviously the reason being is that, economic factors there when you read that article. But it's not as bad. Not as bad as what's happening in China, because over there they're literally given up. I mean, we haven't given up on our sex drive here in Australia. That's one thing for sure. The young people haven't given up on that, because you go to certain parts of the western suburbs and you see teenagers pushing prams. It's crazy. Because of what? Because of the welfare system. And this is what one of the differences that the WeChat chatters have pointed out is the welfare system here that we have here, as opposed to having no welfare system in China. And the other thing, Martin, that the WeChat chatters have been discussing is that the fact that the public sector is forever growing. People may be fearful of or having concerns and doubts about the private sector and job losses and everything else. But the WeChat chatters are saying, listen, if you buy good property, if you buy good homes in good locations, they'll always be rented, because now the public sector seems to be growing, and this is rather concerning, and this is rather for everybody else it would be concerning, but for those that are looking at investment properties, and where they're focusing, they're obviously not overcommitting. They're obviously playing the cards very, very close to their chest in what they buy, and also absorbing a lot of the needs that the mainstream property management sector won't pick up, which is your budget accommodations and the like. So when you start looking at all these factors, Martin, when you start looking at all this, and you start then saying, some are saying, well, this is, we could go, the market could topple over here in Australia as well. I mean, we've got to be a little bit more specific. And if we're talking about Sydney, it's certainly not going to happen. If we're talking about Brisbane, it's not going to happen. Not in the near future anyway. And this is why the WeChat chatterers are so focused, and this is why another reason why we're although there are concerning arguments, or concerning discussions being had, and real events happening over in China with a population cliff, and what people are doing here in Australia, and what they're opting not to do, or to do or not to do, they're they're saying one of the things that still drives the Australian population is those things. We still have those drivers of what the need to have, or the want to have, and if if all else fails, if you don't make it in the private sector, going to the public sector because they're hiring, and there are many in those groups, in the growing, that sector is growing, and if not directly working, where you've got the backstop that we have, and that is welfare, and this is why the WeChat Chatterers and the Silent Tigers are so focused on buying these investment properties.
Absolutely. Well, it's again a fascinating microcosm of the interaction between social trends, and I do think that social media and all of those things have a significant negative impact here in terms of actually setting aspirations, and the fact that it's harder to get into the property market, etc., etc. But did you see this this report? Right, here's a solution. So we can release 137,000 homes if boomers retire and rent their homes. So Aussies over 67 are being urged to rent out their homes and retire overseas in a radical housing proposition floated by property sector market researchers. What on earth?
This is these have got to be absolute. Am I allowed to say that could be jokers working there or what? These are people that really don't. They make commentary about property without understanding property, without understanding what's going on. They should get around a little bit more often. They should really get off their like many property commentators and on social media and on the mainstream, that they really need to get out of their ivory towers and their high-rise apartments, their penthouses, and go and see what's really happening. For starters, there we've had a huge drive for those that have been battling into getting into a long-term accommodation by way of rentals. They've gone back to live with mum and dad. They've gone back to live with grandma and grandpa. We've got a huge surge in building granny flats in order to house the younger family members, keep them close by, because by large we're still gravitating in the most part towards that family unit and keeping close to your extended family. Here in Australia, I mean, to suggest to send grandma and grandpa over to where are they going to go? Are they going to go to Vietnam? Are they going to go to Fiji? Are they going to go to Bali? Are they going to go to maybe they're going to go to Thailand, and learn Muay Thai or get a gender experience there or something? I don't know where they're going to go, Martin, but it's just one of those things. I mean, this is just gobsmacking. what some people write, So when I saw that and I read that article, and then I thought, I didn't put it on my Twitter post. I'd been pretty busy. I haven't been watching much of Twitter lately, but I did read something across, and I'll share it now with our followers and our viewers. And this is, well, if that's what they feel the solution is, well, it really hasn't worked too well, particularly for Mexico, with the simple fact that this is just something on Twitter, whether it's true, whether it's not. I don't have I've got one or two family members in Mexico that I don't talk to, but whether it's true or not, I kind of think it holds some truth. Mexico is now deporting Americans back to the US. Undocumented Americans seeking a lower cost of living in Mexico are driving inflation, are driving up inflation there. This is what would happen if the 170,000 households that the previous article talks about, and the commentator talks about, this is what would happen. And as I said, where would it happen? Where would you like it to happen? Would you like to happen in Fiji? Would you like it to happen in Bali? Would you like it to happen in, in Thailand? Where would you like? Where would you? Where would the favorite destination be for a lot of these, so-called, boomers that that are allegedly are is only 10% of what makes up the those that are the boomers that are holding on to. Established homes in holding on to them and could do well with putting them back onto the market. That's all. 137,000 is only a representation of 10%. I mean, this is it, Mark. This is just no thought, no mention of the fact, pushing the government to pause immigration. No mention of, making it more attractive to, for small businesses, tradies to recruit apprentices, incentivize tradies to put more apprentices on board, to also give incentives for apprentices to stay on board and to finish their apprenticeship. None of that. We can't discuss that because that's taboo. That's not the answer. We can't talk about tightening up the FIRB policies. We can't talk about that. No, because we need that money. We need that cash. We need that stamp duty. We need that that sort of those sort of investments so we can tax them a lot higher. When I say we, I mean the government. So this is the whole. It's all farcical, Martin, and it's almost getting beyond a joke. And this is why, over the last couple of weeks, I really haven't done much or read much or seen much of what's happening on Twitter because, there are better things. It's just driving me nuts, driving me mad.
Well, I have to say, when I was away last week, I hardly looked at socials at all, and I just briefly checked to make sure that the shows went up, but that was about it. So it was actually quite refreshing just to be away from it all. And when you stand back and think about it, perhaps objectively, you think just how stupid this whole situation is, right? It's being created by bad policy, both sides of politics, of course. It's being created by massive amounts of propaganda from the property sector. The social media wave in terms of disinformation is getting stronger and stronger. And, AI is now there as well. So you're never sure whether what you see is what you see. I sort of scratch my head thinking, well, where is this world going to? So I quite enjoy just being out and away from it all and just enjoying the countryside, right? And that's real. So I can definitely say that that's a better way to spend time rather than actually being buried in socials. We should probably just briefly look at the numbers, of course, because the numbers are still there. And I guess if we start with Sydney on the 27th, we had 16,395 property listed for the Sydney region. Jump forward to the 10th of June, it's 16,480. So a little slight uptick once again. And the chart that you've shown there is that 24 versus 23 is quite up a little bit. But then you also made the point earlier on, that's just worth reiterating, it's still not enough to actually pull prices sensibly down. Although, interestingly, CoreLogic, in their most recent data, showed that prices were actually quite buoyant in the lower sectors of the market. But at the affluent end, like Vaucluse, there have been quite significant drops. So, in fact, there is something dynamically influencing the property price moves. And in fact, the overall averages mask a lot. But listings still, well, relatively low, even if slightly higher than last year.
Yeah, it's interesting how a lot of those reports, when they talk about the price drops in in some markets, they bring it down to dollars and cents. And we look at the lower the lower price there is, you start talking percentages. And this is it's rather interesting. Yeah, so shit, $300,000 drop in a home in Vaucluse is $300,000, right? But when you start talking about $9 million and above, it's not a lot in comparison. But look, but one thing for sure is I'm still a believer, and I'm still holding on to the fact that very soon we're not going to have a suburb in the Sydney region according to Domain. That's going to have a freestanding home that's worth less than $1 million because of the various reasons that we've discussed tonight. With the investors, with the builders just focusing on buying, renovating, selling, and that is the and that is where you've got this where you're buying a home for 850,000, putting 100,000 on it, and then putting back on the market for 1.1, 1.2 million, and they're getting those prices. So it's scary what's going on, and the unfortunate thing again is that the first home buyers and the battlers are being thrown under the bus by both sides of the fence. The interesting thing here with those numbers, Martin, is we're just only I think 150 or so shy of having 2,000 listings more on market this week or same time from 2023. It's interesting, but when you look back at the 2022 numbers, same period in 2022, there was over 18,000 listings on market, and as I said before, if you want to talk normality, if you want to talk about normal market, if you're in the Sydney region, we're talking upwards of 25,000 listings on market as a normal market, let alone what we've got now and the appetite that we have for those that are wanting to jump in. The Melbourne market obviously is a different kettle of fish altogether. When you compare that the Melbourne market to the Sydney market, I mean, there's a lot more, and there's a lot more that will continue to bail out. What we spoke about 3, 4 weeks ago, or might have even been 5 weeks ago, with regards to new policies coming in that the witch hat chatterers were alluding to. Well, they've hit the mainstream media now, and now it's only now they're talking about the air conditioning units. They're talking about the insulation, and they're talking about replacing the windows. I mean, these are costly exercises for investors if they want to have investment properties in Melbourne. So, when you on average, if you just an average home, let's say 12 windows of a home on average with just simple cheap made windows, you're talking around $22,000 to $26,000 in replacing windows, and that's average window. That's not semi-commercial or commercial frames and tracks and locking systems. That's just the average that you're talking for an average home. That's where do you recover that, or how do you recover that, or who's going to pay for that? I can tell you one thing, and the ones that are going to pay for that are the short term and long term are the renters, and that's why they we've got such a vast difference in numbers, and people wanting to get out. But some of the mainstream are now saying that investors are buying in Melbourne, and the foreign investors have been the ones that have been buying in Melbourne. The new builds in Melbourne in terms of housing. I can tell you now, I don't believe it will be the witch hat chatterers. If anybody, it more than likely be the Silent Tigers or the new kids on the block.
Absolutely. Well, the Melbourne situation continues to deteriorate in my analysis. The fact is that we've got more investors still looking to get out in Melbourne. That's one of the reasons why listings are continuing to rise. And in terms of my surveys, the net investment returns are continuing to go backwards. So people are losing more and more money on a cash flow basis. So then they've got this impost now of these extra expenditures just to keep the property in the investment sector. So, I mean, it's a bit crazy, really. And just going back to the Melbourne story, it's worth just giving us out the numbers there for those listening on audio. So on the 27th of May, 26,653. And then on the 10th of June, 26,985, so a further rise. Not a dramatic one, but worth noticing. And then if we go to Brisbane, on the 27th of May, 3,329 properties listed in the Brisbane region, and then 3,400 on the 10th of June. So again, a slight rise, but still relatively low. And one of the reasons why the property values in Brisbane and Shallow area still rising, although there are some investment cracks beginning to show there, I think, too. And if we look at the auctions, you can see there that the auction momentum, particularly in Victoria, is still it's still pretty strong. So people are still being persuaded, Edwin, to take it to auction.
Yeah, get out at all costs. Try the quickest method of marketing. First, if that doesn't it's not successful, well then you've got private treaty afterwards, so you can sell before on the day or after by way of private treaty. So they're just wanting to get out. It's interesting. One would have expected a lot more auctions on market or sale by auction in Melbourne than what we're seeing. I would have expected closer to your 1300, anywhere between 1300 to even 1500. Auction listings on market on a week-by-week basis, but for the reason being that they're not is because of the costs, and a lot of the agents are asking for costs up front with a lot of these campaigns, because even the agents are doing it tough, because the less you sell, the less you make, and the way that you make your income or your alternative income source is the marketing fees charged to the vendors, and it's a costly exercise in some cases, not because it's any different to a private treaty company. It's just because that's how the agencies make it out to be, that it's costlier to go to auction than it is to go to buy private treaty. It's just one of those quirky things of the industry and how people get duped. And of course, if you don't have the money, well, then you don't opt for that. You opt for private treaty. But yeah, so otherwise, man, I would have expected a hell of a lot more, like I said, anywhere upwards of 1,300 to 1,500 listings on market. Sydney tracks along steady. It's just a steady show. In relation to the rentals on market, we've seen a push back upwards in Sydney, from 11,388 on the 27th to 11,994. That's been rising over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Which is a good thing, and one needs to, one asks the question why, and I think we raised that point before, and that was because of the supply of granny flats coming on the market, and a lot of youngsters going back home, to live with mum and dad.
Yeah, absolutely, and whilst we are in the rental domain, we might just touch the Melbourne story, because again, that's a bit of a similar thing. 27th of May, 9,799 properties listed for rent in the Melbourne region. Jump forward to the 10th of June, it was 10,253. So once again, a rising trend of listings. Although at the moment, I noticed that those increased listings haven't really dragged the rental rises down, so the average inflation in the rental sector is still very, very strong and is probably likely to stay there for some time. But what I'm seeing in my data is that there is still quite a lot of people in existing rental properties being confronted with increases in rent and very little choice but to either pay or try and find something else, and try to find something else that you can afford is quite difficult. So rental affordability is still shot. And of course, that's feeding into inflation. It's one of the big elements within the CPI number. And that's going to put, I think, more pressure on the Reserve Bank in terms of not being able to cut rates for some time soon. So it's all part of the same picture, isn't it, really? And I guess in such a in such a rather complex situation where there's a lot of economic uncertainty and a lot of concerns. You've got a tip of the week, which is bang on market.
Well, this goes back to the garage sales. Yeah, don't drive past the garage sales, I say. Over the weekend on Sunday, I was driving around looking at a property for one of our clients that were helping them with the renovation, and was going through the back streets, and I saw two kids. Were manning a garage sale in one of the back streets. So, and they were getting excited as the cars were driving by, and excited, and they were getting a little bit disappointed when no one stopped. So, I pulled anchors and I pulled over and I stopped. I stopped for one or two reasons, Martin, because I wanted to help them. Keep them enthusiastic about having a garage sale, with the parents, and also. Somebody's trash is somebody else's treasure. So I dare say it was a worthwhile experience. So, I got a Royal Dalton whiskey decanter for $30, brand new, in a box. So, I was wrapped, and I also walked away with a trolley that I was looking for when I go to Flemington markets and do bulk grocery shopping, fruit and veg shopping there at Flemington markets. I could, I took that along, and I basically saved over $100, I feel, but perhaps even more, and also made the kids smile. The fact that I splurged $40 on their garage sale. So look, I think it works both ways, right? So if you're short of money, you offload. Garage sales can be fun. Can be interesting. You never know who's going to buy or what they're going to buy, and you never know what sort of what you're going to get. So you're driving past. There are people that are doing it tough. There are those that are they just got to offload the excess, the extras in order to keep going. So that was my good deed and good fortune for the weekend.
No, very good. And garage sales can sometimes be definitely worth exploring. You never know what you're going to find, of course, but there you go. Edwin, that's a very good way to end the show. And I look forward to picking up the conversation next week. It'll be back to normal. I will just mention that I've got Steve Keen coming on the show tomorrow for my live show. And we're going to be talking there about why real world economics matters. And in a way, what we've been talking about here is, I think, a good reason to underscore the need for a different way of thinking about the way things work. Because frankly, the way things work at the moment are, pretty messed up, as we've been discussing. So I look forward to exploring that with Steve further. And I look forward to catching up with you again next week for another rant, Edwin. Have a good week.
Well, to myself, and all the best to you, Martin, and good luck with your. And hopefully, you'll take these holidays a little bit more often, so you can recoup and refresh.
I actually think that will be my tip of the week. That even in a time of economic uncertainty, etc., it is worth taking time out, and it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. But it really does recharge the batteries. I certainly feel a hell lot better. And the dogs enjoyed it too. So it's always good. Edwin, we'll see you next week. Cheers.
All the best, mate. Bye.